A very prescient aha. Quite sensibly saying, you are the one. Yes, you are, dear listener. Mary, would you actually like to give a little plug to your family, who might or might not be tuned in at this particular moment in time?
No, they're not tuned in, but hello, Mum.
They can listen on the podcast. Yes. That's the important thing. In the second part of the programme, after the news from the Sky News Centre, we will be speaking to Stephen Jones, OBE, talking about Wear a Hat Day. What hat are you wearing? Let us know, studio@sirenonline.co.uk. And we'll also be speaking to Natasha Kizzy, from the NCS, National Career Service, and Dr. Jennifer Lau about social intelligence. The excitement gets even more. William Setwell might join us. Alan Stevens definitely will join us on Siren 107.3. This is Siren FM. Weather today, highs of 9 degrees centigrade, lows of 5 degrees centigrade. A dry start will become cloudy and breezy later with outbreaks of rain throughout the day.
Hello, this is Jane Clark, the historian at Aintree Racecourse, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition with Alex Lefchuk.
And layers of good quality musical choice. The Moody Blues talking out of town, coming around to 9:10 as far as Siren FM is concerned, Lincoln's first community radio station, and obviously created great interest with the notion of today being Wear a Hat Day. We're delighted to be able to welcome to the airwaves now ace designer extraordinaire, couture soul. Generally, if you want a hat, this is the gentleman to go to in any shape or form. That would be Stephen Jones, OBE. Good morning, Stephen. How are you? Excellent. Delighted to touch base with a good self. And we have to do a little sort of social piece. Richard Fitzwilliams, who was speaking with us earlier in the programme, says he passes on his very best wishes. I think he was doing a feature with you at Royal Ascot a wee while back. So, marvellous stuff there. Stephen, Wear a Hat Day. I mean, clearly, one of the lines that's been coming through from most of our contributors this morning, even whether they've been wearing pixie hats or other things, is that people don't wear hats these days. I mean, I personally have a flat cap, etc. Clearly, from your own point of view, it's a case of, look, we should be wearing hats. Hats are good.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, hats are a way of life. Certainly for me, they are. And, you know, a hat's not just for Wear a Hat Day, it's forever.
Precisely. This is obviously the seventh year of Wear a Hat Day, so it's developing quite nicely. It's clearly in aid of brain tumour research. In terms of the importance of that, I mean, we lost a sad sort of a wonderful celebrity, Paul Daniels, last week to brain tumour. How does wearing a hat effectively help? What's the connection between wearing a hat and obviously it's on your head? Is it just a case of just raising that awareness?
Hello, if I might just say hello, my name's Hugh Adams, I'm the Head of External Affairs.
Hugh, you're absolutely right there, we were remiss in our political scenario there. Hugh Adams, of course, from Brain Tumour Research. Hugh, take the question, please, thank you.
Yeah, so I mean, mean, I think what we're all about here is raising awareness, which ultimately raise funds for research into the biggest cancer killer of children and the under 40s. And it's not just about getting statistics out there. It's about having some fun and getting recognised. And we want to make the hat synonymous with brain tumour research as the red nose is with comic relief, because the more people get involved, the more people understand what's going on, the more people will say, enough's enough, we're going to make a difference. So we have this wonderful eye-catching campaign, and we're delighted to be standing alongside, or to have Stephen standing alongside us with this, to make it a fun, eye-catching, enjoyable campaign for people to get involved in, with a serious underpinning to make a difference for those diagnosed with a brain tumour.
Hugh, we'll be back with you in a few seconds. Mary Dancy's in the studio. Mary, you've been looking at Stephen's designs on his website. Magnificent, it has to be said. Thoughts and questions from yourself?
Stephen, like, you've worked with quite a few celebrities and stuff and designed like brilliant fashionable hats for them. Was there anybody that really like stood out for you? I suppose my question.
And they're all extraordinary. I mean, working with Rihanna is amazing. Mm. Working with Beyonce is fantastic. But I think probably working with Kylie Minogue has been sort of my greatest experience, because she not only wears the hat, she's quite experienced. So she also teaches me about wearing hats too, and what's going to look good, what's going to be great on stage. But she also buys hats to have on her personal life too. And of course, she had a major cancer scare a few years ago. So she's very interested in this campaign and Wear a Hat Day, in the brooch that is being sold for this to raise funds. But, you know, when you make a hat for somebody, you really are changing their life. And, of course, one of the reasons that Wear a Hat Day is about hats and brain tumor research is that often if people are going into therapy or having treatment, they do lose their hair. So I'm absolutely, in my business, we're absolutely aware of people who need to wear hats every day, not because they want to, but because they have to.
When you're looking at actually designing the perfect hat, I mean, I'm well aware of the quality and the craft of the milliner. There's also a mixture of inspiration that comes across as well. Is it a case of when you're looking at the design, you kind of get an initial sort of flash of, yes, this would actually work for your good self, whether you're Rihanna or Mick Jagger?
Well, yes. I mean, obviously, if you know them beforehand, it's a help. And really, if I'm working with somebody, you almost have to become friendly, first of all, and then the hat is an extension of that friendship. But yeah, absolutely. If somebody's very tall, they can have a broad-brimmed hat. If somebody's short, they can have a high hat. If somebody's wearing glasses, they have to wear a hat which is maybe like a beret or something which has got an upturned brim in the front. The hat that we're using this year is this fantastic pink top hat from Locke. Not one of mine, sadly. Maybe next year. But, you know, that the thing about the top hat is very British. And it looks great on everybody, young, old, rich, poor, male, female.
Makes perfect sense. I won't ask for comments on my traditional flat cap, but that's the northern soul in me. Hugh, if we can turn back to your good self, you raise the issue with respect to, obviously, it's raising the awareness of that. Looking at the positive sides of brain tumour research, can we see that this is genuinely something which is convertible? That I mean, I know a number of people who sort of suffered tragic losses due to this, and we mentioned, obviously, from the celebrity world, Paul Daniels last week, of course. Is this something where you feel that actually people can help in terms of this, and change will happen, and we will manage to address these issues?
Firstly, I'd say if we don't do something about it, change won't happen. We're absolutely certain that if you don't invest in research, we won't improve patient outcomes. But to look on the positive side, one of the things that we're absolutely clear about is some sort of parity. I mean, we've had great advances in the treatment of breast cancer and leukemia, and that's because the National Cancer Research Fund has been putting in about £30 to £35 million a year into those cancers, and yet we're sitting at just 1% of the National Cancer Research Fund. So we spend a lot of time lobbying government to make a difference. We, you know, with parity, we will make a difference, and that's why we're fortunate enough to have set up an e-petition based around our manifesto for change, which has received the necessary signatures to trigger a governmental debate. So on the 18th of April, for the first time, the state of funding for brain tumour research will be debated in government, and this is where we will really and critically make a difference. So there are good luck stories. There's still the awful stories of premature and paediatric loss, but we are starting to make a difference. We are starting to see people surviving longer. We are starting to see them become long-term campaigners that we need to raise awareness and funds.
Mary?
How easy, I suppose, is it to donate to brain tumour research? Would that just be on the website or...?
Indeed. Where can people go to support brain tumour research?
Sorry, say again?
Where can people go to actually support and sort of address these kind of things, again, in terms of donations and so on?
Yeah, we make it as easy as we possibly can. I mean, the website is braintumorresearch.org. There's all of the information there. If you want to text donate, you just have to text HAT to 70660 or go onto social media, see what's going on. Be part of the fun on hashtag WearAHATDay.
And back to yourself, Stephen, if we may. As we sort of progress through that, clearly Royal Ascot is coming up. Most people are aware of that. Can we actually start a campaign to actually avoid the Fascinator? It's just a little bête noir for my good self. I think, you know, Fascinators are
okay.
Are they?
Yes. Right. I mean, obviously at Royal Ascot, if you're in the royal enclosure, you have to wear a proper hat. You can't really wear a Fascinator. But for out in the real world, yes, absolutely people can do. You know, some people don't have the confidence to wear a big hat. So if they're just wearing something small in their head, that's fine too. And remember, a Fascinator actually goes with a dress as opposed to tailoring. So for ladies out there, if they're wearing something with a softer shoulder, something a bit more revealing, something a bit chiffon-y, a Fascinator's perfect. If they're wearing a tailored shoulder, a jacket, a suit, something like that, a hat's all going to meet the Queen, absolutely you should wear a proper hat. But I think you would look very fetching in a Fascinator yourself. Don't worry.
Stephen, you might have just sort of managed to start nudging me in a different direction, because I've been almost setting up a mini campaign against the Fascinator from that point of view, but we'll work on that. Splendid talking to both you fine gentlemen. Again, Wear a Hat Day is there. By the way, from your own point of view, Hugh, what hat are you wearing today?
Well, I'm fortunate enough to be wearing a flat cap from Lock & Co, from their Look and Roll range. It's blue, and we have a photo of Stephen and I in the studio, which we will send over to you.
Well, that's we duly share that as well. Hugh Adams from Brain Tumour Research and Stephen Jones, OBE, milliner extraordinaire, I think, to use the whole sort of system through. Delightful touching base with the good sales again. Very important cause, of course, Wear a Hat Day, in aid, of course, of raising awareness about brain tumour researchers. Fantastic work that you're actually doing. I take it you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic conversation with us, gentlemen. Has it been okay for you?
Yes, very enjoyed it very much. Thank you very much.
That's good. Well, hopefully we'll be able to return again and resume again, if not next year, then certainly during the year, to see how the battle against brain tumours is continuing. Will you both return?
Yes, please keep in touch.
Delighted, thank you.
Excellent. And I think possibly in aid of Easter, a little touch of Kylie Minogue and chocolate. People have been talking about the art of the schmooze, the importance of networking. We spend a great deal of time, obviously, dealing with our students, ensuring that networking is such a vital skill. And back in the 70s, I seem to recall EQ was the buzzword, which with respect to emotional quotient, to address the whole notion of how social intelligence is actually vital to encourage youngsters to actually develop and grow in their own particular life paths. We're delighted to be able to welcome ACE researcher specialising in the psychology of adolescent mental Mental Health from King's College London. That would be the wonderful Dr. Jennifer Lau. Good morning, Dr. Lau.
Good morning. Hi.
And the equally wonderful Director of the National Citizen Service, Natasha Kizzy. How are you, Natasha?
I'm great. Good morning.
Excellent. Natasha, if we can come to you first initially with respect to life skills and so on. At the heart of this report, which we'll talk about with Jennifer in a few moments, seems to be the notion that still youngsters are having difficulty really dealing with areas of life, different social strata, different people from different chronological age ranges. It's still a challenge, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I think, we saw that there's about 8 in 10 saying that they find it difficult. They're a bit anxious about meeting people from different backgrounds. And, the National Citizen Service programme is designed really to take teenagers out of their comfort zone and give them an experience where they will spend 3 weeks working and having lots and lots of fun with teenagers from different socioeconomic backgrounds, different religious, ethnic backgrounds. And I think that's really important today, that people have the confidence to mix, because it's about, as I said, building up that confidence to go into those social and work environments and be able to cope with the stress and anxiety that, that exists.
Jennifer, social intelligence and the next generation carries with it certain connotations of Star Trek, with infinite diversity and infinite combinations. From your own perspective, Jennifer, the research, did it create any major surprises? Did you sort of think, well, we kind of expected that, or was it a case of, no, that's quite interesting?
So one of the sort of maybe surprising findings of this report was the link between social media use in young people and social confidence and social skills. So contrary to what a lot of people would expect, we actually found a positive association between those. So young people who were more sociable were spending more time on social media a day. And that is quite surprising, given, you know, that the social media has had some negative press recently.
Well, that's absolutely right, because clearly one gets a sense that if you're consistently locked into your screen-based culture, liking, hashtagging and various other factors, somehow you lose touch with the real world. It seems from this particular survey that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, so we thought that perhaps that finding meant that young people were using social media as an additional form of communicating with their friends, so WhatsApp or Facebook, that kind of thing. But we also argue quite strongly in the report that those skills that are involved in maintaining an online relationship is very different from face-to-face, which is still the more common and traditional way of interacting with other people. And so it's very important not to lose sight of the skills that are important in those. So even for employers, they're more likely to, you know, give you face-to-face interviews. And so it's important to prepare young people for the challenges of those, which is why, coming back to NCS, programmes like that are so important.
Well, indeed, Natasha, I mean, it's all well and good us spending time saying, oh, it's important to learn how to network effectively, it's important to build up those social skills and so on. Listening skills are clearly vital when you're dealing with interviews and so on. But are they skills which are innate, or can we actually develop them? Can we hone them? Can we effectively teach them?
Yeah, I think we can. And I think it's about teamwork. It's about interpersonal communications. And it's also just really simply being able to look somebody in the eye, shake their hand and feel confident about that first initial encounter. And these are all things that actually it's vital for teenagers to practice. So as a parent, you know, any parents that are listening, it's really important to think about ways in which you can encourage your teenager to spend time with other adults and, you know, gain that kind of confidence, but also find time for them to spend with their peers and really have experiences where they can explore and have safe adventure, if you like, because once they get out into the workplace, you know, it's not really about testing and trialing. And we would say that NCS is one of the ways in which they can explore and have that safe adventure before they're ready to go out and work.
And we mentioned, obviously, not just about different cultures, different environments and so on. Would you say it's also a generational thing as well, that sometimes we hear a great deal, actually less so perhaps, about the generation gap, but is that important to obviously ensure that people relate to people of different decades as well?
Oh, absolutely. And through NCS, actually, we find lots and lots of our teenagers who will develop their own social action project. That's a key part of NCS, actually, that the groups of teenagers all get connected with the local community, find out about their community, and then deliver a self self-authored social action project, and quite often those are intergenerational projects. So we have young people going into old care homes and teaching them how to use Skype so that they can connect with relatives, or creating memory books for them so that they have books that will remind them of precious times in their lives, and use that to stimulate them as well. So absolutely, it's vital.
And Jennifer, do you find that with your own students and work with respect to that at King's College, that social intelligence is something which kind of people take for granted, or is it something which we're constantly honing?
So it's interesting that the group of people that I study are adolescents, teenagers, and there's increasing evidence that suggests that the social brain and functions that are attributable to the social brain are still developing and maturing across adolescence up until young adulthood. So definitely that period might still be one in which they aren't consolidated and entrenched, and where external influences could be beneficial.
I was fascinated to find that 9 in 10 adolescents are still nervous about interacting with people from different backgrounds. And is that something which you can expect to see come down as a figure, or will it kind of remain pretty constant as the years head by?
I think it should come down. I mean, basically, you know, programs like NCS are about mixing people from different backgrounds and getting people to realise that actually, you know, underneath it all, we're all the same. And so, you know, it's vital that they have those experiences, teenagers, because they're going into a work environment that is much more culturally diverse, racially diverse, and, you know, much more technologically advanced as well. So things like negotiation skills and, as you said, communication, teamwork, etc., it's vital that they have those experiences before they start to engage with the workplace.
I think it's absolutely right to refer to them as vital skills as opposed to soft skills, which often tends to be used as almost a put-down and a derogatory term. I mentioned that top of the piece about EQ and emotional quotient. That used to be very much a buzzword in the 1980s. Is this the next generation of emotional quotients, actually being able to actually read people's skills and so on from that interaction? And actually, is it as important and as vital as IQ intelligence quotient?
Yes, so social intelligence does share some overlaps with emotional intelligence, or EQ, but it kind of builds on that. So it's about applying our understanding of other people's emotions and thoughts, and to use that to decide on the appropriate form of interaction with others in a variety of social settings. So it is very important in the workplace, and in fact, one of the key findings from the survey of employers in the UK found that they very much valued verbal communication, teamwork, interpersonal skills. So and a lot of them were saying that it was more important in terms of career progression and development than more traditional IQ. So it seems from their reports that, you know, IQ can only take you so far, but to get to that next stage of leadership and vision, that these skills, vital skills, social intelligence, were much more important.
And hopefully we've used those interactive skills fairly effectively with respect to the medium of radio. Ladies, it's been wonderful touching base with your good self. Natasha, if we can just finally conclude with your good self, a web address for the National Citizen Service. Where can people go to find out more information?
Yes, go to www.ncsyes.co.uk.
There you are. Many thanks indeed to both Dr. Jennifer Lau and Natasha Kizzy. Hopefully we'll welcome you back in the not-too-distant future. Would you be kind enough to return sometimes, ladies, and keep us appraised of what's happening in the world of general social intelligence?
Absolutely. Yeah. Our pleasure.
Yeah.
So, Mary Dancy, after Rick Okasek and Emotion in Motion, what are your views on Dr. Jennifer Lau's survey into social intelligence? Are you EQ, emotionally, you have a high EQ, geared up? Or?
I think so. I'm not really sure. I suppose, well, I hope I'm emotionally with it.
Could be critical in every sense of the word. I think traditionally it's often said that it tends to be more of a feminine characteristic.
Yeah.
It's the men who can't sort of identify emotions and all sorts of things. Oh, Alan's actually left us. Clearly, he's all we got there is the phone signal that's over there. William Sitwell's also left us, obviously, to celebrate the excitement of Easter.
Well,
it is. I know we're in the midst of Holy Week here. Maundy services are coming through. Happy birthday to Kate Clark, by the way. She's made a fine number of years on the planet so far. Mm. It's ages. Very nearly, right. But she's doing very well. So that leaves us with getting Alan Stevens back, I suppose, really.
Yeah,
which
we need to
sort through. We'll do that. So, you know, we'll actually sort of take up the receiver, dial a number, and then hopefully you'd say, it was the Doctor and his TARDIS. He took me off onto a different line entirely, left Caldor City and couldn't land on planet Siren. You know, that was the reason why we kind of lost him in midstream and couldn't sort of say what his views on emotional quotients were. Well, never mind. Then again, he might have got bored and decided, no, I can't go on. I mean, he, like Ian Lennox, has got two cats, but they're not, of course...
Hi, this is William. Well, leave me a message.
Oh, it's William. Lord above.
When we finish recording...
Well, we'll leave a message for William. Yeah. That's okay. Sometimes you just expect that. William, good morning once again. Sorry, it's a formal message left. Bye.
Mary Danzy.
And Alex Leftshire, wishing you all the very best. Have a splendid Easter period. That's it. Okay, thank you. Marvellous. Good. Well, that sorted that one out.
He's had Easter wishes.
Well, shall we actually now try to return to Alan Stevens and see if he's actually there or whether he's possibly given up the ghost and has decided to do something completely different instead? Although we did actually speak to him earlier. It's that sort of uncertainty that as we come around to 20 minutes to 10 o'clock, it brings a certain sort of charm to the whole sort of sequence that's actually there.
Hello.
Yeah, you see, that's it. You know, I was so annoyed, I decided to throw the phone down. Never mind, it's all sorted out there. Good morning, Alan Stevens. How are you?
Good morning. Sorry about that. It seemed to got cut off.
Do you know, we noticed that just when we came to you after a really big build-up. You know,
I can imagine that. Yeah.
Celebrating the whole.
There's drum rolls and everything.
You'll just have to listen to the podcast, and then you'll see the pause that actually sent us into such a tizzy. We ended up leaving a message on William Sitwell's answer phone. Instead, it's okay.
Falls apart when I'm not there.
Well, clearly, that's quite right. We might have started off with Duncan Goose talking about the notion of one water. World Water Day, of course, took place on Tuesday this week. We went over to Richard Fitzwilliams to talk about Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield Lane, to be precise, not Cloverfield, although there can be a connection there. Ian Lennox, who was really just trying to feed his cats, which is nice. It's juxtaposition, because there's Ian's cats with...
We have such an entertaining show. It's brilliant.
That's sort of notion of the two cats... who are, what are the Ian's cats' names?
Oboe and...
Ollie, of course. Ollie and Oboe. Not quite as dramatic as Aisha and Zhukov, who of course are the cats that effectively have chosen Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore to effectively look after them from that point of view. How are they, by the way, Alan?
They're okay, yeah. Doing well.
Yeah. And what time of a morning do they eat? Because this could be another little feature that we need to run a survey on, in terms of do they eat whenever they feel like it? Do you?
Well, I'm supposed to be eating at 10 past. I'm supposed to be eating, having a breakfast, and then going out at around 5:10. But they've been starting up recently. Sometimes they start at 2:30 in the morning, trying to wake up by licking their paw and dabbing on your nose.
2:00 a.m. Are they just 24-hour party cats that you've got there?
No, they spend all day asleep.
Well,
I am all for a feature on cats, so I think it should be done.
It will happen. I mean, we've had lots of dogs, obviously, over the years, but you know, we'll bring back the cats, clearly. Worked our way through that. And, of course, the key aspects, not only for the question we need to put to Alan, are you wearing a hat today, Alan? And if so, what kind of hat are you wearing? Because it is National Wear a Hat Day.
Is it?
Yep.
Yes.
there's my answer then.
Exactly. You can. It's not too late, of course, because if you wish to actually show your support for Wear a Hat Day, which is actually, again, raising the awareness of brain tumour research, you can do so, as we found out from Stephen Jones, OBE, and, of course, Hugh Adams from Brain Tumour Research. Then, Alan, you'd be delighted to know that prepping the way for your good self and your emergence like a butterfly into the science fiction part of the show, we had Natasha Kizzy, director of NCS, not NCIS, easily confused, spent a lot of time dealing with that, the National Citizenship Service, NCS, mm-hmm. and Dr. Jennifer Lau from King's College talking about social intelligence. Which brings us neatly round to our introduction for your good self, Alan. As a writer, do you find that actually writing characters with good EQ is easier than writing them without sort of any kind of... Do you build a simpatico into your characters, or do you think, I don't care, they're just ciphers, and I move them around the page at a whim?
EQ, emotional quotient.
Yes, yes.
it's funny, I was... I'll go with that in a minute, actually. No, you've got to write... characters are strange things. If you create them correctly, they basically write the story for you. So you know they're not ciphers. You know you'll write a character and then you'll think he would do this now, and then you think actually that is not working at all. You wouldn't do that. You'd do something else, or she'd do something else. So now you've got if you write ciphers and then move them around like chess pieces on a board, then you know that might do something for your control freakery, but it won't much do for you anything. That won't do much for your readership. Mm. So there you are. Yeah, you've got to imagine the characters. Mm. I don't know whether they're extensions of me. I hope they aren't. Some really nasty characters I've written.
I think so. So, breaking news, Alan. I know you'd be sympathetic to this one. William Sitwell dropped his phone and it's not working.
Oh,
but
no.
He's on his landline, so we might still have a little Sitwell piece in the programme. You see, what did we used to do without the joys of those instant messages, which work our way through that? I thought it was a very sage answer. Mary, would you like to address anything else with respect to the Stevensmeister? Such as what colleague of his is actually working on a new audio version of the Daleks?
That is completely out of the moment.
Shh! Nothing.
I can't even mention it.
That's all right.
Question.
Yeah. Well, that's blown the interview completely, hasn't it, really?
Not the question you were going to ask. I'll tell you one thing, though. I did, Fiona and I watched, you know, Broadchurch?
Yes. Well, by Chris Chibnall, of course.
Yes. There's series one of Broadchurch, yes. And there's series two of Broadchurch.
Uh-huh.
And it was made available recently on one of these, you know, download box set things.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, well, you know, being he's going to take over and destroy Doctor Who soon, perhaps we should take a look and see, you know, how he did on this Broadchurch thing. Yeah. Because apparently series one is very good. And I watched it, series one,
mm-hmm.
and I have to say, it was an excellent piece of drama. Mm-hmm. You know, David Tennant was actually watchable. You know, the cast was generally good, the direction was good, the music was good, and the writing was good, and there was subtlety of character, mm-hmm. and all these things are missing from Torchwood. And I thought, my goodness, you know, this really is quality drama, mm-hmm. written by Chris Chibnall.
Mm-hmm.
And then we watched season two,
mm-hmm.
and that was like doing it all again,
mm-hmm.
but sort of like through a load hailer. So all character subtlety was completely removed by them saying, and then he did this, and doing a sort of court case which went over the material, which we already heard before, but doing it in a very clunky, awkward, and generally entertaining in a kind of, you know, look, there's a car crash over there, let's go and rubberneck. So I really don't know. I mean, how can you produce something as brilliant as Torchwood Season 1 and then literally, you know, defecate all over it, your own show.
I think there was a Freudian slip there. He actually said, how can you produce something as brilliant as Torchwood Series 1? I think he meant Broadchurch.
Did I say that? I keep mixing them up. I keep saying Broadchurch and Torchwood.
You see, is it any wonder we might have actually gone down a line which we shouldn't have gone down at all? You know,
Broadwood?
Broadwood. Message.
Broadwood. Torchchurch?
Yeah.
Torchchurch. Yeah, that works.
Yeah. Churchwood?
Were you at Sci-Fi Weekender?
Sorry, what?
Were you at the Sci-Fi Weekender?
What site? It was a site. There was a Sci-Fi Weekender?
There was, yes. I believe there was. Is it not the annual Sci-Fi Weekender in Wales? I take it you weren't invited. Never mind, Alan.
No, I was invited. Why did you go?
No, but our colleagues and friends of the Stone Tapes did. And
it was already taking place, is it?
I believe so. That's why Sam Stone was actually featured in the Game of Thrones churn. Do you get the feeling the script hasn't been quite as tightly written for this piece, Mary, as we'd originally anticipated?
No.
The thing is, we would go along because every time that last, I think, 3 years or whatever, there's been something that we've done, which we are launching. This year we haven't done anything for them, so there was nothing to launch, so we didn't go along. It was actually quite expensive to go up there, to be honest. Well, I mean, the boat we've got in free.
I'm not.
Also, it's bloody cold as well.
We were talking with Derek Hamley yesterday about all sorts of other exciting things, which, again, we can't talk about on air. So there we are. Alan, have you had a reasonably interesting, albeit... William is there, and I just don't want to lose him at this particular stage.
Oh, right, so William outranks me, no. Even though he's on a landline.
Oh, gosh.
Now, children, don't fight. This is important. You know, we've only got a few moments before we actually... I mean, it is the season of, you know, resurrection and all sorts of other wonderful things which will be there. So, Mary...
There is a convention this weekend, isn't there? You're not going to.
Yeah.
Up in Manchester. I don't know what it's called, do you?
No. But they're all...
How well prepared you are today.
Mary Dancy will be off to an expo at the...
I'm going to MCM Comic-Con in London.
Exactly. And we'll be at Sci-Fi Scarborough on April the 9th as well.
Is there a sci-fi, you know, cinema thing this year?
Yes. And yes, I'll look to ensuring. I'll get the words in the right sort of order.
Getting ensuring.
Yes, I will look to ensure that Louis Savvy is made well aware that you are our officially designated guests and co-presenters. So yes, that is taking place, and we'll speak more about that as the thing proceeds. Last two questions, please, Mary.
Yes, have you had a recent interesting telephonic link with us today?
Well, interesting certainly is a word I'd use, yeah.
I blame the cats, personally.
I think I would go with the cats.
Yeah, but they're not even in the mood.
2 o'clock in the morning is ridiculous to start sort of eating.
Well, it is, isn't it? It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And Alan, will you be joining us again soon?
I think next week we'll give you a longer version. We'll talk a bit more about that. We'll plan things out together. We'll get it sorted. Alan will return.
Bye-bye.
Got a tattoo, set to get us through.
Of course, the real unanswered question on Wear a Hat Day is maybe what sort of hat is William Sidwell wearing, or what's happened to his mobile phone? I mean, there's so many ways we could actually go. It's just unbelievable. William, good morning. Welcome to the programme. How are you?
Yeah, very well. I'm not wearing a hat, but I have got some trousers on.
Good. Thank the Lord for that. As we've just been celebrating the Wear a Hat Day in aid of brain tumour research with Stephen Jones, OBE. So I think, William, you'd quite suit a fascinator, actually. I think we should work your way through that. Easter is literally around the corner. Exactly. So Waitrose all set and ready to do some magical things, he says, giving some shameless product plugs there.
Yes. What do you want me to say? This is a personal question, or you want me to speak for an institution?
Oh, whichever way you take. It's gone into a whole range of ways. What happened to the phone? Let's go to the... Did you just drop it in a bucket of water, or what was the challenge there?
I was trying to get away from you guys, and I thought that if I smashed it, that might help, but it hasn't worked.
Mary, questions for William, please.
Questions.
Yes. She's been working so hard in the whole sort of system. Just finished her dissertation last week. It's just unbelievable. Anyway, carry on.
I am actually interested. What did happen to your phone?
Yes. It's
what did happen to my phone? I dropped it for about the fifth time, and on the fifth occasion
it didn't work.
It gave up the ghost, except it rings when you ring it.
Oh.
But I can't answer it, and the screen is black.
Well, we have left two very meaningful messages on the voicemail, which hopefully will be more. Alan Williams, of course, the reason you were unable to join us last week. I know John Wenham was beside himself. Where's William? He's interviewing Alan Williams. How did the interview go?
Well, I can't talk about that. Obviously, it's an exclusive. But he is a great chef. He used to work for... He was a sort of... the rock that operated restaurants for people like Gordon Ramsay, Marcus Waring... for many years, and then he set up on his own at the Westbury Hotel in London's Mayfair, and he got a Michelin star for what that's worth, and he's just a very, very decent man. Chef Alan comes from East Ham, now lives in Fulham.
Which is not too far away, I suppose, from Mary, your own base in London.
Is it
on that sort of zone?
Yeah.
Moving onwards, looking towards when can people actually access the interview? When will it be public? Because, I mean, the last couple of moments, we've obviously sort of had two faux pas. One with a Doctor Who scholar, which, you know, and now, you know, the Alan Williams situation. I don't know. D-notice is coming out of our ears these days.
Well, you know, I've had my head down trying to get my book finished and preparing for Easter. I don't know about you, but I'm going to be... going to try and char grill some lamb and cook some dal that I ate for breakfast in Malaysia. I think that'll be a good combination. Amazing.
Which works well. And Sue Rice, of course, who's still actually in therapy after the response that William gave a couple of weeks ago when she asked what was he doing in Malaysia, none of your goddamn business. I thought that was good. I said it's the way forward. That's the critical routine. Do you have Easter egg hunts in the Sitwell household? Will Northampton be resounding to what the Easter Bunny's been up to? Or again, is that something we can't talk about?
Well, obviously, as you can imagine, wherever I walk, there's a trail of children in my wake. And I
like a pied pamplin, but a pied piper of...
A pied pamplin? What the hell's that? No, I obviously always have a clutch of little mini eggs, which I cast off to the urchins. You know, their black-faced, grubby-toed feet, you know, around me, and I throw them eggs. And that's generally it. Yeah, but no, I'm looking forward to some good lamb.
And that sums up so much of the marvellous routine. Would you say lamb is your choice for an Easter scenario, or is there a vegetarian equivalent, or is that just heresy?
Well, I don't know. You have to ask the vegetarians. I mean, I think that we probably eat far too much meat anyway. So eating lamb on Easter Sunday is sort of nothing special. So I think therefore you need to just think carefully about it and do it well. Maybe very slow roast for many, many hours and do a sort of something kind of Moroccan or
alternatively have a sacrificial lamb and you get into the Passover spirit in the full sense of the word. Just a thought.
You could just eat a vegetarian feast and sacrifice someone.
Exactly. Clearly, the views of some of our contributors do not necessarily echo that. We're not advocating human sacrifice at this time on Monday, Thursday. It's just, please, different line entirely. William, it's been a blast as ever, later than normal, but... Mary, would you like to put those last two questions to William as we begin to head out of the programme?
Yes. William, have you had a reasonably short but interesting telephonic link with us today?
I think directionless. Would be
true. I mean, hats off to the young lady who actually answered the telephone, who responded with the line, well, I think I've got his mobile, but his mobile's no longer working. I thought, we know this. And then the sort of line, oh, he's coming back to his desk now, which is wonderful. You know, it's rather like the equivalent to earlier in the show, William. We were given a studio number which put us through to Sir Geoff Hurst as opposed to milliner and hat designer Stephen Jones OBE. You couldn't make it up sometimes, honestly.
Yeah. Now, I've got some alternative... Easter treats in front of me, which were given to me by a philanthropist yesterday called Dame Stephanie Shirley, who came over in the beginning before the Second World War on one of the Kinder transport trains from Germany. And she said, oh, you're a foodie. So she gave me a packet of crispy critters, which are salt and vinegar flavoured crickets, and some barbecue flavoured mealworms. Nice. So that's we could have that as an alternative to lamb.
I mean, it was Magnus Pike who, actually, Mary, you're probably too young to remember Magnus Pike, but he advocated fried locusts as a definite alternative. Eat the insects. That's because of the line he was taking, which we might sort of address this time next week, because the second question is...
Will you be joining us again next week?
God help you all.
And you get a chance to say goodbye to the nation as well, actually, William, because we say thanks to Duncan Goose, founder of One Water, Richard Fitzwilliams, of course, as ever, Ian Lennox, Natasha Kizzy, and Dr. Jennifer Lau, and Alan Stevens, Stephen Jones OBE, and Hugh Adams, and William Sitwell. Thank you. Thank you, dear listener. We're going out with the Beatles and Hey Bulldog. Can we all say bye-bye?
Goodbye.
We're waiting for you to say goodbye, William.
Ah, goodbye.
There you go.